the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, and we're actually going to push back Patty Gallagher for a little bit, and Leslie as well, because Andy Serling will sub for Rich Migliori. Rich tied up, and so I'll we'll move Andy up 24 hours. How about that? And that'll be good. And he's I can tell he's on the muscle too. I guess he won't be surprised if he gets very confrontational because I because of my my suggestions earlier about maximum security. Now I want to get Andy's thoughts on the weekend, and we'll put Mig into tomorrow. So Andy Serling first, then Patty Gallagher and Leslie Young, and more. All right, so Andy next. I guess I'll wait a second rather than me launching into anything else right away. The maiden performances here we should mention as well, including how about there was that call D, but also on Saturday. Phil Serpy with Ambersand. That was there's a bunch of people that are tearing it up. Jim Bond. we're so focused on the heavy heads, Chad and the people that have had the big numbers at the meet, Clement and Pletcher, but Jim Bond, of course, has just been remarkable. In fact, here's Andy now. He can praise what a great meet Jimmy Bond is having. Andy, good morning.
What if I didn't want to?
You don't have to, I guess.
Do a big corner. I like Jimmy. Let's discuss Ampersand. He came up a gold rail and got a 66 buyer. So I'm not going to put him in the Breeders' Cup just yet. But if you want to, don't let me get in the way of that happening.
Well, the talk about the gold rail, actually, because later in the day, of course, you had Seafoam that obviously got carried by it, and he wasn't the only one. There was another one too that Nautilus seemed to benefit from it.
It wasn't really on the rail, but okay. I thought there were a couple of long shots that sort of came back. I mean, that was Friday, maybe. I don't know. It just seemed like the inside was good. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not going to review the charts right this second, but the rail seemed it seemed like it might have been off on Wednesday and Thursday, and then Friday it was really good. And then Saturday, maybe the rain, But there were a couple horses that sort of came back really strongly in the rail. I don't remember if it was Friday or Saturday. He finished second at big prices. Seemed like the rail was good. I know Ampersand was bad heavily. He did have some trouble at the start, but, keep in mind, it was an off-the-turf race, and he was at least in the best part of the track. So I'm not going to get too carried away. I like the other Ampersand, right? Didn't he run like a dozen years ago?
I've got a vague recollection of another Ampersand.
Do you think it's right that the house where I'm renting and back, I decided to spend a lot of time working on the house early in the working on the porch, electric saw early in the morning?
Well, you seem to be, you're a magnet for that kind of thing. Right, whether it's the working on the street in Manhattan
working on the street in Manhattan will never bother me because of where I'm located.
Yeah, I'm working in the building at least.
Maybe the loud band that was playing one night at midnight in the apartment, but like in a brownstone sort of below me. So yeah, Jimmy Bond is having a great meet. This horse is really running, no doubt about it. They are. He's got 10 wins and 31 starters or something, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people are doing well. So I do want to address something. I hear you were sort of surprised that a lot of horse players don't like maximum security, or did I hear wrong?
I I feel like no matter what the conditions are of him performing, he's a lightning rod for criticism that is just over the top. It's just constant, a constant magnet for, you know, for negativity.
And you really, you don't understand this. Okay, let me explain.
No, I understand
it. Let me tell you why he's the subject of vitriol from horse players. Whether fair or unfair, we've all spent our lives getting beaten by horses that we suspected. And maybe we were wrong. Maybe we were just wrong and paranoid, and certainly considering some of the idiocy I read on Twitter, a lot of it is wrong. But the reality is we feel that we have been cheated for a long, long time by horses that were using performance-enhancing drugs. He's mm-hmm. a poster child for it, fair or unfair, because he was trained by a guy that everybody suspected and then was arrested and is currently indicted. He's under federal indictment for using performance-enhancing drugs. So Maximum Security stands for those horses. He stands for every horse over our lives that's beaten us out of a score in a pick four or a pick six or whatever we've been betting on. Or maybe it was just a win bet, whatever it was. Or maybe it was second in exacta. But it's not. I'm not saying it's fair. And I get it. You know, I'm not saying he's not a good horse. And I don't even think a lot of people are saying he's not a good horse. But he stands for it. He's sort of the poster child for that frustration that's built up in horse players for a long, long time. And I think to not understand it is to really not understand the plight of horse players. So to me, it's really clear. And I'm not saying it's fair. And he's a really good horse. And I'm glad he's winning for Bob. And now he's winning for a trainer that, despite what some people may say on Twitter, I don't have any reason to suspect he's doing something untoward. I don't think an overage of a Mavivacaine, or it was Lidocaine. It says anything. But so I'm glad he's doing well for Bob. But it doesn't matter what he does for Baffert, and it's not saying it's fair. But he stands for those horses. That's why a lot of horse players don't like him, and it's not even.
That's not. I understand that. That's not what's at issue. That's not what's at issue.
What's at issue?
The question is, the critiquing of that performance on Saturday, it was like looking for reasons to...
Right, because he's a horse that many of us are always going to have trouble looking at in an unbiased way. I didn't say it was fair, Steve, but I understand why it's happening. And listen... He goes out and nobody challenges him, and he waltzes along in the front end. And, you know, I know a lot of people felt. And listen, I didn't really look at the race, so I don't have an opinion on it. But the prevailing opinion is that he sort of was just sort of granted an easy lead and a slow pace. And because there's already this sort of vitriol against him, yeah, he's not going to be judged fairly. I get it. I'm not saying it's right, but I totally get it. Totally get it.
Distilled.
Obviously a really, really good horse. You know,
that's the only point is that he's a really good and hard trying horse that these two performances at Del Mar. That's the only point. And I don't, you know, you actually are somebody that always talks about being, you know, being performance focused, and from a performance focus, that was a strong effort by him. And you know, running
I'm not
a
sure.
bunch
I'd
of
I'd have to look at the field. I'd have to watch the race. I'd know the track. I can't judge it. Maybe it was great. I don't know.
It wasn't great. It didn't have to be great. I mean, it was fast enough. It was a mile and a quarter. There were questions. You know, let's see him. You know, as an older horse at a mile and a quarter, etc.
Why was the question a mile and a quarter? He won the Derby.
There were people wondering, you know, saying, is mile and a quarter necessarily his best distance? We haven't seen him the trip. Well, exactly. So from all of that, and he went out and met it out 24 seconds.
This is all fine, Steve. This is all fine, and I understand. And I'm not saying I have some big problem with him, but he represents something that is a great frustration to horse players. And he's always going to represent that. And that's why a lot of people are going to judge him unfairly and judge him harshly.
That's fine.
The good news for him is he doesn't know.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Probably not on Twitter. He's on horse Twitter, and they're probably talking about other things. So it's not going to bother him. He's going to sleep fine at night. He's going to eat fine. It's all not going to matter to him. His feelings won't be hurt. But it's just a fact. It's going to be associated with him. Every time he's brought up in history, he's going to be associated with Jason Service. And I'm glad he's doing well for Bob Baffert. I know that'll annoy a lot of people, you know, but Bob Baffert hasn't been, you know, I don't have the same issue with Bob Baffert that a lot of people do on Twitter. I get it, but I don't. So I'm not going to get into that group. I'm glad he's doing well for somebody else. I am. But it's not going to change the way people feel about him because they're going to associate him with Service. Fair or unfair.
Dive into the two turf grade ones that we were treated to, and back to the rainstorm on Saturday morning that certainly had an impact on that turf course.
Huh? The rainstorm woke me up.
Yo, it was something.
I'm very upset. I think I threw my whole weekend off.
Well, the turf for. Not so much yesterday, but certainly for the four-star Dave, has got to be part of the discussion.
Why? I thought it was firm.
I don't think it was firm everywhere.
I don't know. I don't know. Well, I think that, I don't know if I would say it was, I guess, yes. I think the course was, I don't know that it was the rain necessarily that created the situation, because I think if you look back on it in retrospect, there might be an argument that the inner turf course on Friday was similar, where being inside was a distinct advantage and rallying, you know, out in the middle of the track was a real disadvantage. And I'm not sure if it was a combination of both or one or the other, but, you know, like, look at that race that Duopoly won. And how inside position was helpful in that race. Now, I don't think anybody was that wide in there. But I do think in the four-star Dave that the two things happened. First of all, Holiday's a good horse, but he was able to control at a very moderate pace. I mean, it's a grade one, and they went 47 and changed the half, right? And they came home in 46. So right there, you got a problem for the closers. So wherever they were going to have trouble closing into that. Right?
Yes. Yep.
But, you know, not only did the winner sit in the rail, I'm trying to find a place where there's the power saw, but the second horse was on the rail and angled out in the stretch, the two path. I mean, they drifted a little bit in the stretch, to be fair. And the third horse, Catholic Creed, was on the rail for all the entire race until he drifted to the three path in the stretch to rally.
Yes.
So all three of those horses basically rode the rail the whole way. And The story of the race, for fair or unfair, is that Chad Brown ran four, including the first, second, I think, co-third choice, and he didn't hit the super in a nine-horse field. That's pretty remarkable. If Uni didn't fire, or Raging Bull didn't fire, or the other one, and to a lesser extent, without parole, that's horse racing. But when all of these horses don't run a step, and, you know, we'll forget about Ballot Point, probably just over his head. It's fair to ask, was there some reason they all didn't run? And they all had sort of similar trips where they were off the rail for basically the entire race. Because you need to watch the head-on, you'll see Raging Bull and the filly Uni were in the two-path or so. And then they swung out and tried to rally the stretch. And that's the way a lot of short horses run. They try to save ground, swing out, and rally the stretch. And if you watch the head-on, you'll see they're in the 5, 6, 7, 8 path somewhere, you know, the three of them. And they're all spinning their wheels. I mean, their heads never even appear on the screen, right? So I do think it's realistic to suggest that it was very tough to rally out in the middle of the racetrack.
Yeah.
Stretch. And, you know, was it because there was a distinct advantage inside or was there a disadvantage outside? I don't know. But I do think it's reasonable to suggest that all those horses were compromised somewhat by the course. It happens. You know, I don't think it's was it because of the rain? I don't know, Steve. I don't know. I really don't. I also didn't look at the overnights, and I mentioned this morning to see if we're going to put turf rails up this week. But it did seem like it was advantageous inside / disadvantageous outside. And like I said, if one of them ran poorly. I mean, you're talking about horses that ran, you know,
yeah,
eight lengths worse than they normally run, two to three of them. It can't just be random. It could be, but that would be pretty incredible. So I'm going to say that the course played a role in that.
Agreed.
It doesn't hurt to take away from the winners, but it certainly is an excuse for the losers.
It is funny. I mentioned this earlier.
But it's problematic. You could argue that that's a problematic situation if you're running three major players in the race and they all have the same running style. Right? We often talk about an entry. You know, you say that a trainer has two horses in, and one of them's a speed type, one of them's a closer. And you feel like they're a great complement to each other, because if the race dynamics favor one way, it'll help one horse. And if they favor the other way, it'll help the other horse. Whereas if you've got three that are running the same style, and you know, to be fair, a lot of Chad Brown's horses on the turf, because the running style that works very often in real turf racing, they're less inclined to be speed types. Now, that's not the case with Rushing Fall, and it's not the case for Newspaper Record, but in this case, all three of these horses now, they have similar running styles, so they were all compromised. And, you know, you run three horses that run the same way, you face the possibility of being compromised by a racetrack or dynamics or both. And maybe both got them here. It's also worked pretty well for those horses in the past. I mean,
right.
Rooney came here as a very, you know, nondescript European, and look at the remarkable job that's been done with her. And she won an Eclipse Award last year in a Breeders' Cup race. And, you know, Raging Bull is a really nice horse, but I wouldn't say he hasn't been a little bit of an overachiever at times. So, you know, it's worked for the most part. It did not work Saturday.
It was nice to see Got Stormy lift her head up and run a good race.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, it almost feels like a microcosm of the meet that Mark Cassie's had, because it really looked like she was going to win. I mean, coming to the eighth pole, she looked like a cinch. And, you know, I could imagine Mark was watching it, and as she couldn't go by, he probably just ducked his head down and thought, of course, I'm never going to win a race in Saratoga again. You know, there's nobody that hasn't had that feeling before, you know, and it's rough to watch, you know. Their horses are underachieving, and she overachieved, and she really did run well, but she just couldn't get it done, and I think that's probably the way he feels about a lot of the meet. And I'm sure it's very, very frustrating.
Let's stay on the stake front, and then we'll get a couple of other conversations in. But the Rushing Fall and Mean Mary confrontation yesterday really was worth the price of admission.
Yeah, that was really something. That was a really great Diana. I think it's a race that, you know, when you step back from it, it seems like an even better race. Mean Mary had more ideal circumstances, you know, but she's. Obviously, she's for real. And I think she's shown that she can be effective. She doesn't need to go 11 furlongs or something to be good. She's now run well at 9 furlongs, you know, this year up to 11 or 12 furlongs. So she's really good for Graham. I mean, she also continues an incredible run of really reasonably bad luck in the Diana, where he just has horses run races that are good enough to win, and they seem to finish second every time. So, you know, besides from that, she ran terrific in Rushing Fall. I mean, what is she now? 11 for 14 with two seconds, six grade one wins. She's won grade ones every year of her life. Well, she'd done that even before this race. And, you know, this notion that, you know, she's not as effective at a mile and eighth was, of course, belied by her past performances, where she ran some of her best races at a mile and eighth, including, I thought, last year's Diana, when she just lost to a better horse who ran a great race. And she's just as good as ever. She really is. And you know, I would argue that Javier let Mean Mary go a little too easily. Should have made her work a little harder if she wanted to get the lead in the rail and get that coveted rail position. So I'm not saying Rushing Fall had a bad trip, but, you know, she could have made Mean Mary go a little bit more, and if she wanted that rail, go a little faster. So, you know, she ran very well in victory. She was the best horse, close victory or not, close result or not. She was the best horse, but that doesn't take away from Mean Mary running well. And I actually think Sister Charlie ran okay when you consider the way the race was run. And she's not as good as she was last year, but I think it would give them some hope that maybe going for the Flower Bowl, she has a chance to get it done in a mile and a quarter.
I completely agree.
With Mean Mary again.
We should mention too. I as far as I know, I have not heard anything to the contrary. Lucky that Secret Message and Arat Ortiz came out of that gate incident where Secret Message reared and looked like she was going over. That looked bad, and looks like both came out okay.
Well, I know Irad watched the race on the photographer's stand, right?
Yeah.
So he's okay.
Yeah.
We rode in the last race. But, I mean, I assume she's okay. I haven't heard anything contrary.
Yeah, no, I think so, too. She seemed to, from what you could see on TV, she looked okay. It was nice, Andy, I thought, in a lot of ways this weekend, because you had one stake race, one big fat grade one, both days, and made for a nice afternoon. We spent Saturday, we were in the nightcap and spent the day and really enjoyed it. It's been, under the conditions, it's been okay.
Well, it's going to really set you up for having to go to Louisville for 2 weeks.
Just a week.
I mean, I get why Manny Franco's going. I don't get why you're going, but whatever.
A quick note before I ask you about the Friday, because the Wesley Ward winner was tremendous. The Empire Six yesterday, which seemed very approachable and fun to handicap. How about the Ron Breed Jr. with that high command off that layoff, and winning it a mile and an eighth? That was the fly in the ointment.
Yeah, it paid. I mean, we already paid $1,000.
Yep.
Parlay was like about 800 or something.
Yep.
Yeah. It was a tricky race. I mean, that looked to me like the hardest race in the sequence. I'm glad it paid a smaller amount. I mean, it means that a lot of people had a chance to hit it. So
exactly.
I hope that a lot of the smaller players hit it. And I know that horse made a little tougher, but obviously a lot tougher, but still, I mean, to pay that amount makes me feel like, a lot of the smaller players had a chance, and that's what I like to see in those things. I hate when
definitely.
It blows up and it just ends up in the same people's hands over and over again that can drown the thing with money. So yeah, I was glad to see it was relatively logical, at least, and it was manageable. And I think that's why one of the reasons it handled so well is that looking at it, you looked at it, you felt like, oh, I could put in $78 or something and have a chance.
That's what I did. Yep, 78.
That's right. I lost, but that's fine. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people could have singled the first winner. I didn't, but a lot of people could have. I thought the third winner was the best single. Just barely won, it was a playable and hittable sequence. I like that.
Agreed. And Pete's play call boosted it a little bit, a little under 5-1. And I was alive on a few things into the nightcap. Nero's Fiddle. I thought I was clever finding Nero's Fiddle, who ran, I thought, a very good race, but got corralled.
Well, he ran the second best race. The third horse ran the best race, and the winner ran somewhere between the third and sixth best race.
We hate when that happens, right? Talk a little bit.
It's always great when a horse who's nowhere near best wins as the favorite. That's always
I get that. It.
And I didn't bet the race, so it didn't matter to me, but obviously the third horse should have won. Probably not Irad's best ride of the meet.
Golden Pal on Friday in the Skidmore.
Yeah, he ran fast, huh?
Yes.
I mean, from Ascot, boy, he took that terrible beat in that race at Ascot. He looks good. He got a 92 buyer, does that sound right?
Correct, yes.
He might be better than Toby's Heart. I'm not giving up on Toby's Heart. I actually thought she ran really well, too, because she didn't have a race blow in her favor and made a wide move and still won the race, whereas that horse just fast. But that horse, Golden Pal, is fast, I agree. He's probably the early favorite for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf Sprint. I have a question about the Breeders' Cup. Are Euros going to show up?
Interesting. It's an interesting question.
That conversation that hasn't been had, has been had. I'm just curious. I mean, can they show up? Will they show up?
It's a great question.
I'm curious. I don't know. I was talking about it with somebody yesterday. It came up.
Well, you bring up a great point. The travel restrictions regarding personnel.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. Regarding a lot of, yeah. I mean, I mean, I haven't heard it discussed by anybody, and I think it is a reasonable discussion to have. Is this going to be a Breeders' Cup where it's just horses from America, which, you know, won't affect some of the races, but it's clearly going to affect the turf races. It'll affect all the juvenile turf races. It'll affect the mile, and it'll affect the mile and a half, and the filly and mare turf as well.
Well, but plus,
I have no idea, but I'm curious. Has anybody in the Breeders' Cup addressed this or talked about it?
Not yet, and I know that patrons, ticket holders are wondering now aloud, given the Derby decision on Friday, which was not unexpected, people beginning to wonder too.
I can't imagine that they're going to have fans on at the Breeders' Cup, right?
It seems a bit of a
Has Keeneland announced that they're running their October meet without fans?
They have not. I mean, they're both of the sales, you know, both the Phasic sale after Derby and then the Keeneland sale the week after. People need clearance and need test results and they have to go through a process. So, I mean, how much that now you're in mid-September. I mean, you're only a few days removed afterward from the meet starting. So it seems Kentucky Downs also, of course, last week, going no patron. So it continues.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate reality of the world we're currently living in. But I just happened to think about the Breeders' Cup. You know, I'm wondering if, you know, that I would have to think it would at the very least, it would reduce the participation. I mean, I suppose people could send a horse from overseas, but they probably wouldn't come. I mean, you have to quarantine if you can come and all those things. I don't really know all the logistics of travel, but it's a reasonable question, right?
Well, and I just received, and I appreciate Eric Hamelbeck from HBPA, just sent me a note that the governor today, Frankfurt, is going to discuss the fall sports landscape in Kentucky today. So, and while that focus is on scholastic and collegiate sports, first and foremost, expected that Keeneland would be in that conversation, and of course Churchill, you know, with their both September and November meets. I mean, it's got extensive.
It is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Andy, looking ahead, and we've got 2 weeks remaining. We've got a big focus on the 2-year-olds, obviously looking toward Labor Day weekend, and the spin away and
too, right?
The what?
A lot of stakes this week. A Forgo is looking like a big field. Whitmore and Mind Control and Complexity among them. Sword Dancer as well. A bunch of stakes, right?
Yes. And we
have a big field for the Lake. What is it, Lake George on Friday? I think, is it the Saranac is on Saturday? Maybe one of those races. I think it might be. I'm not sure. But there's a bunch of stakes on Saturday, right? There's
the Amsterdam, the Saranac.
That's actually looking like an interesting race because that what's the horse's name for Yalpai or that horse for Asmussen? That's 2 for 2. One earlier in the meet. I'm terrible in names. Long weekends running for Tom.
Yep.
But yeah, no, that's looking like an interesting race as well. A bunch of horses are coming back in that race. I might happen to win is coming back in there. Yeah, it should be a good Saturday. Should be a good week.
Well, and the Lake George, as you mentioned, on Friday, nice to have graded stake on Friday. Then the Amsterdam Forgo Saranac Sword Dancer Saturday. The Shuvi is on Sunday. Then closing week with anticipation and the PG Johnson Wednesday and Thursday. We got the State Bred Day, the State Bred Stakes card on Friday, the one that for many years preceded Travers. And then on closing Saturday, the Glens Falls Jim Dandy Prioress Woodward. Closing Sunday, the Honorable Miss, the Lucky Coin.
You know, work this morning, by the way, speaking to Woodward. And I got to go, actually.
Okay.
Tacitus.
And good? Well, good to go?
Well, I saw a tweet from Mike Welch this morning that said he worked this morning.
Nice.
That'll be exciting. That'll certainly get Twitter abuzz.
Always. And then closing Sunday is big. The Honorable Miss and the Spinaway, and then closing day, the Lure and the
Hopeful.
The
Run Happy Hopeful.
The Run Happy Hopeful.
Steve,
Andy, I appreciate the Monday visit, and try to see you before I head out. Otherwise,
listen,
it'll be better.
Never know, though. I certainly hope I see you this week. Make sure to stop by. I'll try to recognize you this time.
That's the danger of the mask scenarios, right?
It's more dangerous not to wear them. I'll talk to you later.
Well put. Andy, certainly everybody, and last 2 weeks, and of course, we'll talk to Mig. Tomorrow. Patty Gallagher is going to join us next, the Get 'Em Now case, and then we'll talk to Leslie Young, too. I'm looking forward to talking to Leslie as well, celebrating her exacta, not just the win, her first win in a New York Turf Riders Cup handicap, but also ran 1-2. Very cool. But we'll start with Patty, and talk about the grade one win. And you know, I've said it many times when it comes to, here's the Oaks, when it comes to Aaron Wellman and his team, they, the way in which Aaron has spread horses around really a positive. And you know, that Patty gets a chance with a horse like this and capitalizes on it. And, you know, you could see the incremental improvement since she came to North America. And, you know, starting at the beginning of the year, this is actually this was her seventh start. And she's picked up a check in every start. And, Patty's, you know, tried her a different distances, and she's acquitted herself well, particularly on Saturday. And it's a pleasure to welcome Patty Gallagher back to the show and congratulate him and Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners on Red Lark's Grade 1 Del Mar Oaks win. Patty, congratulations.
Hey, congratulations to Red Lark for sure.
She's run a lot. She's sort of the turf version of Swiss Skydiver, and there's been incremental development. Talk about, you know, getting to know her when she came over from abroad, and how she's come forward.
Well, she came over in great shape, and she's kind of settled in, and she just kind of enjoys her training, enjoys going out with the pony and coming home with the pony, and just enjoys her training. And she's quite enthusiastic about everything. And so she's very nice to be around.
How quickly did you, you know, get a feel for, you know, for her aptitudes? It took two starts to break her maiden, and you know, you've kind of moved her interchangeably between a mile and a mile and an eighth. So you've felt that she's, you know, that she's got some tractability and some versatility.
Yeah, you know, she came well recommended because the guy that owned her, bred her, Anthony Rogers, and he called me and said, you know, this little filly, although she's ran decent in Ireland, and he said, but he thinks that she can improve. She gets older, and he recommended her. So the previous owner, so that's why we kind of bought her. And she has her first run. I think we may have run her in Golden Gate, and she just got a little bit. It took her a little bit. It was kind of a surprise here, the style of racing, and she got a little bit. It was over sort of before she knew it, really. But then she showed her second start. Going a mile and eighth, that's kind of what she wants, to go that far, it seems like. And she's just improved bit by bit as she's gone on in her training and her running. She really, really run good the other day in the Oaks.
That's for sure. And you immediately after the maiden win, challenged her in the China Doll, and she faced up against Warren Showtime there. Then in the Honeymoon, she ran kind of evenly, and Laura's Light. I mean, so she basically was keeping company with the best of the division. And then this was pretty audacious, and it really, now in retrospect, Patty, it stands out that you ran her against older fillies and mares in the Wilshire, and she ran a terrific race against the likes of Toinette.
Yeah, she did run really good, and we kind of were just hoping that she should hit the board, which she did a bit more than that. She stayed on well to be second, and so it was a great placing, and this time of year, fillies two turning three, they can start improving, and she seems like she's done that. And we were delighted with her performance, and she just she's enthusiastic about everything, racing and training, and so she's developed nicely.
Now, this is a big win, when you get your hands on fillies and opportunities in grade ones, it's so important. And Eclipse, not that Eclipse hasn't had good males, but it does kind of feel like Eclipse's filly program stands out. I was praising Waiting for, as you were going to join us, to have the opportunity that Aaron, gives you with a horse like this, and for you to capitalize on it for him and the partners.
Yes, I appreciate greatly what the Eclipse and Aaron Wellman has bought the likes of this filly and let me have her to train. So I appreciate it very much, and I just always hope that I can do good for Eclipse. And that's what the game's all about, and you just try and have any owner, all the owners that buy horses or get into racing, just try and have them enjoy it, and we do the best we can to make it happen. And when it turns out like it did at the Del Mar Oaks, it makes it extra special.
Well, and the Del Mar Oaks was already a special race to you anyway, because your first grade one win came in the Oaks, right? Magical Fantasy?
That's correct, yes. That was really special as well, and Magical Fantasy won for Chuck Winner and David Beanstalk. But Eclipse Stable, we also were placed in the Del Mar Oaks with a filly called 3 Degrees and a filly called Val Benny. So,
yeah.
I probably had a little excuses maybe to get beat. We were kind of unlucky, but they were very, very good fillies. To finally win it for Eclipse was really, really nice.
And I'm just pulling it up. In fact, Alex Solis aboard Magical Fantasy in 2008, and she was, she's actually a horse that time kind of has forgotten. She won a bunch of big races.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think she may have won like 4 grade ones, I believe.
Yeah.
Maybe. I think so.
Yeah.
She was a very special filly too, and I think she may have ran 5th in the Breeders' Cup that year, and it was a really, really tough Breeders' Cup that year, and So she was very, very nice filly, really nice.
And I'm just looking. That was when Midday came over and won. Won that filly and mare turf. But ahead of that, she went on a tear that summer, and even back to the spring, she won the Gamely, the Maybe, and the Yellow Ribbon. Bing, bang, bong.
Yeah, she won. She was she was a big stout filly, and you know, she like you say, looking back, she was the best one that was here that year for sure.
Unbelievable. I looking ahead to the fall, it's always interesting, Patty, coming out of Del Mar and this 3-year-old program, you know, which is for the turf horses, male and female, and in fact you've got a Del Mar Derby to your credit as well. But it kind of feels like the filly and mare turf would be, you know, a little aggressive for a 3-year-old like her. It feels like, you know, you kind of look for some other opportunities, the Queen Elizabeth maybe, or what, I don't know if you've talked about this with Erin yet, but some thoughts about what's ahead for her.
Yes, well, Erin spoke to us the other day after the race, and he brought up, you know, that maybe that race at Keeneland, or there's a race at Belmont, and you know, those 3-year-olds, I think the race at Belmont's 10 furlongs and the race at Keeneland. So, those are the races that you certainly just keep in mind for, you know, the 3-year-olds that are coming up. So, and, you know, there's probably a race at Santa Anita. So she's got her options, and it's nice nice that we have the opportunity where we can run against 3-year-olds for the rest of the year if we wish to do that. Yes,
exactly. I mean, how much and you know, how much growing do you think she's got to do physically?
Well, I think she's probably doing that right now. She's kind of when she bought her, she probably looked at, she's kind of not small, but on the smaller side, but not small. But now when you stand in here, she's even looking at her every day, I've still, you tend not to notice, but I have, even looking at her every day, I've noticed that she's really, when you stand into her, she's got a lot more size and scope here now. She's got a little bit older, so that's nice to see happen.
Now, and you get the sense that as a older horse, that there's still improvement coming for Red Lark.
Yeah, she gives that impression, Steve. Yes, she certainly does.
Well, this has been a very solid Del Mar for you too, and we should touch on the way the rest of the meet unfolds. You had a nice maiden winner, and I'm gonna draw a blank.
There was a filly that won down here, Pretty Point. She won the allowance race. Mike Smith rode her. And then I have a couple of... Actually, I had a nice filly run called Miss Addie Prey. She ran second the other day, and Uncle Mo filly on the grass. But I've got a couple of coming up that hopefully that are a couple of fillies that came in from England that look kind of very interesting that Eclipse have purchased. So
nice.
We're trying to run them if we can before the end of the meet. And if not, then we always have Santa Anita back here in the fall.
Well, and it's funny you bring up Miss Addie Prey because we had caught her. It kind of caught some attention, Addie Prey being the character out of Paper Moon. The book, actually, it was called Addie Prey, and the movie is Paper Moon. And so when I saw her name, I got a kick out of it. And she ran a nice second at a big price the other day.
She did. She ran. That was her first. She ran a couple of times sprinting on the grass, Steve, and then we tried her on the turf, she came running. She ran an exciting race. She came running and finished second. Yes, she ran really well.
Well, and you mentioned Pretty Point, and that was an allowance that came the early part of the meet. And
yes.
What this is a point of entry filly, and a 4-year-old. What she got stakes. You tried her in the CTT TOC. Was that just too deep, or?
Well, I think what happened, she was just unfortunate that there was no pace in the race, and she's a lovely big filly. She ran third, I think, in the American
yes.
Oaks at Santa Anita, and she won down here in the allowance race, and then the race the other day, that stake, it sort of was, you know, the horses that were up front early on stayed there, kind of. There wasn't a lot of pace in the race, so it didn't help her style. So, but she came out of the race in great shape, so I think she's a filly that we may have to ship around the country a little bit and get her in some of the longer races, and we really like that filly a lot.
Nice, Pretty Point. And coming up later this week, next Saturday, you know, the Del Mar, the way they're drawing the races, you get Friday and Saturday drawn early, and Fashion Royalty comes back in an allowance in the 7th on Saturday, and Star of Africa, a recent maiden winner, too, I think at Golden Gate. Talk
yes,
about
correct.
Next Saturday.
Well, Star of Africa runs, and... she runs in that starter allowance on the grass, and she's come out of a race in great shape, and it'll be interesting to see how she runs against winners, but she's trained well since the race, and we're kind of looking forward to running her. And then Fashion Royalty, Steve, we actually entered her in a dirt race to try her on the dirt here, and the race did not go. But bringing it back as an extra, so if we may wait for a dirt race on Sunday with her.
Interesting.
And see if she she seems to train nice on the dirt, so we want to try that, see if we can improve her performance. So.
Well, and that's an Andrew Rosen homebred, and a Warfront out of
yes.
a Street Cry mare, and who knows?
That's what they're just trying to see if... she seems to train nice enough on the dirt and move good on the dirt, so that's plan A, is to try that. So,
well, she does. I'm just looking at the work tab. Work tab's okay. Yeah, she.
And she worked nice on the dirt the other day. And like I said, we just entered, and this is a backup plan. And hopefully, we get a dirt race to go here the next day or two, so then we can try and get into that.
Well, we got to get the biggest thing to happen between now and Labor Day. We got to get Giovanni a win.
Yeah. sometimes it happens and sometimes
right.
it doesn't happen. So that's just Charles Barkley, whenever Michael Jordan quit the basketball to play baseball, and it didn't quite work out, and Charles Barkley gave him some advice, Charles Barkley told Michael Jordan, just keep swinging just in case you hit one.
Exactly. You know, we talked about it on Friday. I talked about it with Brad Free, and Brad just said, you know, it's been a summer there for the riding colony. It's been kind of the haves and the have-nots. I mean, the guys that are winning are winning in bunches, and you know, then not that they're journeymen that don't win, because they do. It's been very tough. It's been a rough summer for some guys that, the wins have been, few and far between. But for you, it's you win the Grade One Oaks. It's a good meet. It's been a good
yeah.
Del Mar.
Yeah, it makes up for a lot. It certainly does. And hopefully we can do something else before the rest of the meet is over, too.
Well, Patty, great to connect, and delighted for you and Aaron and the team as Red Lark, a big win, and certainly the partners that bet must have been happy with a 40-20 mutual.
Yes, that was nice. That helps as well. So I hope they all had a little interest in the windows, and yes, it worked out really nice, thank you very, very much for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. Patty Gallagher, everybody, and Red Lark, the latest grade one winning filly for Eclipse, and they had a steady supply, and whether it's Michael McCarthy and what's going on leading up to the Oaks and Graham Motion and George Weaver and Aaron does an amazing job spreading good horses around to their trainers, and this is a situation where Patty converts with this interesting. I'll talk on Wednesday with Sid about Epaulette, the Australian sire, and about this pedigree, because there's some offbeat things going on. Epaulette from Australia, and the mare Firecrest, who's by Darshan, and there's a lot to talk about with. In fact, this whole field had a bunch of, we talked about it on Friday, there's a lot of interesting European pedigrees on display. So, very happy for the team. We're going to stay right here because Leslie Young is going to join us. And speaking of international bloodstock, how about Rashan, the Manduro for Leslie, going back to Thursday. And she runs 1-2, her first win in a New York Turf Riders Cup handicap. And really, a win that some people, everybody watching, seeing Leslie and another Patty, husband Patty Young, in the winner's circle. And Tom Garner, got to mention his achievement here, winning 2 New York Turf Riders Cups in a row. Part of the storyline. The part of this that came up, in fact, Seth and I mentioned it yesterday too on TV, that, as Bill Gallo told you, no more stakes after this. And, this had the potential, given the presence of the favorites, Moscato and Optimus Prime, given their presence in here and the fact that there's not going to be any other stakes, if either one of them, Moscato or Optimus Prime, had won on Thursday, you'd have to think that they'd be your champion chase horse for 2020. But Rashan throws the hat in the ring, got a terrific front-running and pace-attending ride from Garner. And Leslie Young joins us to celebrate her first Grade 1 New York Turf Riders Cup handicap. And Leslie, congratulations to you and everybody at Bruton Street.
Thank you so much, Steve. It's definitely a thrill, so thank you.
One of the first things I did after the race was go to look to see if you had won a Turf Riders, and it was missing from the resume. So that knocking these kinds of stakes off Saratoga and all the things that go with it, obviously a real pleasure.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, I think the best I ever did in the Turf Riders was maybe Patty had ridden Andy Amu, and that was back the year that Portrayed won for Elizabeth Voss. We were second that day, and I want to say the only grade one we ever won was Gustavian in the Lonesome Glory at Belmont, but he had been second in every other grade one there was out there. So, but that was a thrill. Obviously, Saratoga is a great place to race and win, and we're just delighted, the whole team. So it was great. And Patty was there, so it made it even better.
Give us a little bit of the background, because this is a horse that showed up at Far Hills last fall.
Yep.
And came over from Ireland, and other than the third in the Temple Gwathmi, he's kind of a mystery to a degree.
So last September, Patty and I went over to Ireland to County Carlo for Brian Crowley's wedding. Brian was a jump jockey here, with sure. mainly for Shepherd. So we went over for his wedding, and when I was there, Kevin Tobin and Sean Flanagan gave me a call, and they said, there's a horse that Sean Flanagan had been riding. He was kind of a small trainer's horse over there. I think he was kind of stuck in the handicap, and was I interested? And the price for, you know, that caliber of horse was reasonable to me for what they have out there. So I had an owner lined up. I went, looked at the horse, had him vetted, and then that owner kind of backed out. And I was like, oh, my God. I didn't want to, like, you know how that is. And so I rang Charlie Knoll, or I emailed him and told him the situation. And so I really liked the horse for the price, and I said, you know, he's a bit quirky, but, you know, I think he's worth a grab, and he came through for me. Now, the horse hadn't run since the Galway Festival, and unfortunately, last year when I got him, I don't think he was fit the way he should be. I think they kind of had let him down, so I did not have a lot of time with him in the fall to get him to where I really wanted. I said, but let's just, you know, they want a runner, let's go. It really wasn't kind of the show I wanted, but this year we were able to focus on him more and really kind of start his training off from, you know, January 1st the way we would like, and then obviously COVID hit. I do think he was good enough to win at Middleburg this year, but he's very quirky. He backed himself. He was sitting in third, and he backed himself 30 lengths out of it with, like, four hurdles to go with, like, a mile left, and then he came on again. Now, he's bred by the Aga Khan. He was meant to be a world-class flat horse. He went to Halfords in the Curra, and as a two-year-old, he refused to train. So he was very quirky. Colin Kidd, I want to say, bought him for 4,000 euro, and he ended up being, I think it was like Golf Ireland Sale Buy of the Year or something. He was at one point maybe favorite for the Triumph Hurdle. You know, he won 13 races on the flat and over jumps in Ireland. So when he was on, he was on. When he's off, he's off. And it's like I said to them, it's interesting. His name in Arabic means the thinker, and he definitely is a thinker. Hmm. But he outworks anything at home. And he had worked well with Court Ruler and, you know, Must See the Doc. And I thought, well, you know, hey, if he puts it in like he does there and we keep him happy, that's the main thing, and it worked out, you know?
Unbelievable. And he clearly, being involved from the get-go, how much of that, I mean, how much of this conversation did you have with Tom, who did, you know, ride him at Middleburg in the Guath meet?
Yeah, well, and Sean Flanagan, who rode him in Ireland, said, listen, you know, he's the kind of horse that if he walks out there and he decides to plant, just give him a pat, kick your feet out of the stirrups, and turn the other way. Don't give him a slap. Don't, you know, don't try to bully him. Just do what he wants for 2 seconds. And we have to do that at home a lot of times. And Tom has been really working hard with the horse at home. I'm very lucky to have him in my barn every day and as a stable jockey. And, you know, I know he loves Rhodesian dearly, and it was definitely a hard decision. But, you know, I said, Tom, I truly feel if this horse puts it on, there's no better horse in the country. And I know that's a bold statement, but he's got the ability. But, you know, like I said, if he decides. So he was in good form, and I think Saratoga was new to him. And I'm kind of happy there was not a big crowd, because I don't know if that would have made it a little more challenging for him. But the horse, you know, when the other horse came to him down the straight, Rhodesian, he was just being leery, waiting for him, and then he took off again.
Yep. Yeah. It was notable, and it's, you know, it was also I saw Garner, you know, take a peek too over his right shoulder to see if there was anything, you know, looming up on that side too. On the turn.
Yeah, he said he actually. He said he was hoping they'd come to him sooner. He said because when he got to the front, if anybody watches the replay, his ears are like little satellites going back and forth, and he's kind of like, where is everyone? I'm in the front. And then once Radishan finally came to him, it was like he needed him to eyeball him, and then, oh, okay, here we go. I'm going off again. And then he's so cheeky and funny. After the wire, it was like he was going to prop and stop, you know. He'd be one where he probably would know where the exit was, afterwards to where the paddock is. But he's very clever, but he likes a routine. He likes definitely being in my smaller barn where there's only 8 horses. I have 2 different barns. He likes being turned out all night long. That was the only little worry I had with shipping up. But he was fine. But normally he's turned out every night. And he enjoys that, and it keeps him happy, you know?
I love it. I mentioned that for Garner, his second in a row, Turf Riders, and then the benefit or the pleasure of running 1-2 in here as Radician comes from mid-pack and absolutely out-finished Moscato and Optimus Prime, you know, that it certainly felt like Johnny I was kind of, you know, looking and waiting for them. And you know, Radician hasn't won since the Kaiser, but he's obviously a really nice and still young. He's a 6-year-old. There's still plenty ahead for him. Talk about his development.
Oh, he's lovely. So it was March, I was in England for the Cheltenham Festival, and when I'm over there, I'm always trying to network and meet owners and, you know, look at horses and whatnot. And we went to Alan King's, and we looked at Cracker Factory and another horse, he ended up at Jack Fisher's, and then it was a week later, I got a call from Hamish McCauley, my friend who's an agent there, and he said, look, on the quiet, I think I can get this horse Radician. And obviously, he had been favored for the Triumph Hurdle. I asked a couple of people, and then Sharon Shepherd came through, and you talk about a class act, easy to ride. Anybody can ride him. He's easy at the races. He's a lovely individual. He won at Saratoga, then he went to Belmont, and he had a heel grab, so we were kind of, you know, that was kind of a bummer because he, you know, his heel and stuff like that. So this year, I think we could have, and I don't want to sound like we could have done this, but I think in the AP, and Tom might beg to differ with me, but I think now he doesn't, I think we went too soon in the Smithwick. We hit the front a little too soon down the back, and I think if it had just changed a little bit, we could have maybe been, I'm not saying we would have beat Mascotto, but I think we would have been a little closer. So the plan was this time just to hang on to him a little longer and don't use our kick until coming out of the final bend.
Leslie, the season has been, we got a couple more to run. Don't know how many more you were planning to send at Colonial. You had run a few during now aborted season. Give everybody a feel for how you and the clients are reacting with what you have to deal with the way the schedule is going to, has been really truncated, and difficult year it's been.
Well, you know, we started off the year, I think we started with 25 horses, and really, this is a competitive sport, and I'm a competitive person. We really wanted to try to give Fisher and, you know, Sheppard a run for their money, and, you know, I'm, you know, they have 50, 60 horses. I have 25. And I really think we could have. And then that hit. So, you know, I had some owners want to stop with, you know, timber horses, which is fine. I understand that. You know, I had a couple that sometimes I get some myself and try to resell them or get them to win and vice versa. I couldn't do that this year. I had to stop. And, you know, the hard part, and I'm not saying the hard part for me, but I have to rent my facilities. You know, I wouldn't necessarily want to be at a racetrack full time. I like being able to turn these horses out, and I like trying to do something different with them every day. You know, we have grass gallops uphill. We still can go to Fair Hill, places like that, but we just like that. So, you know, it was hard. Some owners took a pull, and you know, I need to buy more horses and restock, and you know, a lot of people are just being cautious, and I can't blame them, you know. We have races lined up for the fall, but, you know, if some of these things spike, you know, spike with kids going back to college, you never know if they might put restrictions again on events. So, you know, Al Griffin has done an amazing job. He came in at a really bad time, and he's persevered, and you know, Dougie Fout, kudos to him for putting on Middleburg, and Al Griffin for Gold Cup, because, you know, financially, they love the sport, and they took it on their shoulders to really take a lot of that financial burden on themselves, and I appreciate that, and I'm sure some of the owners do. But it's hard, you know, at least the racetrack, you guys have it televised and all of this.
Right.
For some of my owners, you know, for the fall, a couple wanted to take a pull because they said, well, if we can't go and watch and we can't see on TV, you know, what's the fun in that? And I have to agree, but I'm like, please don't stop, because, you know, this is how I make my living and this is how I employ my staff. So if you want to keep us going, we need horses, you know? So it is what it is. And, you know, just if we keep ticking and chugging along, that's all I can hope for. And, you know, I think if you look after the horses the best you can, they will, you know, they'll try their best for you. And I have great staff. I have two very good assistants with Brian Slater and Jordan Thompson. And, you know, I'm lucky I have Tom in the barn, and I have some really, really good loyal owners. And I found that out after my husband got hurt, who was loyal to me and who wasn't, you know. Wow. So, you know, it's the way the world goes. And but we were happy, and I'm just blessed to have some good horses in my barn, you know. And it's, as Tom Voss said, when you got good ones, sometimes, you know, it makes your job a lot easier.
Yeah, that's for sure. How good is Tom Garrow, who goes for that second lifetime on Wednesday?
You know, he has ability. I do like the horse. He's been a little disappointing, to be honest. In Middleburg, I think maybe we went a little too soon. Last year at Saratoga, I learned a lot about him. I think he boiled over a little bit with the crowd. I think he goes better now with the hood. It kind of keeps him a little more quiet. He'll have the hood on, and there's no crowd, so that makes me happy. And I think last year we went off chasing Zanzi Win, and that didn't work out. So I'm not saying he wouldn't be in front, but I would hope that I don't think there's going to be a lot of pace. I think he's a galloper, but I think when you hold on to him, and if you have horse going into your final bend there, if he's off the bridle going in there, then no. If he's still on the bridle, then I think he'll give it his best shot. At the end of the meet, I'm looking forward to running Bodeswell back. He ran really well for me in the novice stake, and he's in good form, and he's a very genuine little horse. So we'll see, and I'd be hopeful for that. You know, I'm hoping that Tom Garrow, if he runs his race and gets the ride, you know, we hope for, you know, I would like to see him in the top three. There's no reason why he shouldn't be, but horses are horses, you know. Nothing's ever a guarantee. But they're in good form right now, and like I said to the owners, when they're running well and training well, you got to run them, because you know what it's like when you're in a positive mode and everything is good at home. You know, you got to run them when you can.
Well, certainly in this condition, in this environment, a great opportunity to, you know, to get another grade one. Your first came in the Lonesome Glory with Patty and Mrs. Bryant and Gustavian and Leslie. I was so looking forward to this call and to congratulating you, and there, I'm sure you saw, you know, all the outpouring of affection for, you know, the two of you in the winner's circle on Thursday.
Oh, thank you so much. And now it's always fun, and it's always fun too when you've got the long shot that comes up and does it.
That's the beauty. 8-1, $18, and yeah, that's the best part. And you know, Bill Gallo, we've talked on and off air. You know, one of the things that this the pandemic and its effect on particularly on the hunt meets really is crying out for attention when it comes to, you know, wider wagering on the jump races and you know, an additional revenue source, and you know that's something that I know that the team is anxious to pursue here. One of the things that that realization has kind of set in. So
especially, you know, when every state has their own rules and this and that, I do think if we in the future look to maybe even the NSA owning their own venues, and then if you had some kind of even online wagering or something to help, you know, bring in the purse money, because it's like show jumping. It's all sponsorship. And right now people don't want to sponsor too much stuff, you know?
So. Well, not if there, you know, yes, there could be some visual, some impressions when it comes to broadcast, but it's not like what we get, you know, at Far Hills and having, you know, 50,000 people and being, you know, being exposed from a marketing standpoint that way. So it's something that they're going to work on. And meanwhile, the racetracks continue to be, you know, Naira, and unfortunately what happened at Colonial derailed a handful of races as well, but keeping, you know, trying to keep everybody going, and you made the most of the opportunity. Leslie Young, continued success.
And I will tell you, nothing made me happier than my buddy Gary Siaka calling me after the horses went 1-2. And you know, good old Gary, he was in my win picture last week, and I said that just made my win, you know? So, I love all my old flat track friends and, you know, my old boss, Dr. Cheney. I miss those days immensely, but it's always fun, and I appreciate Naira for still having the jump racing. And, you know, it is a tradition for years, you know, Mrs. Phipps had them, and I hope they continue to have us, because we do appreciate it, and we love seeing everybody up there when we can, so thank you.
Leslie Young and the New York Turf Riders Cup Handicap, the second of the two grade ones, and she runs 1-2 and her second grade one of her long, successful career. Training the Hoppers, and we love seeing Leslie win. We're going to stay right here because Billy Koch is standing by at the track. He's at Del Mar, and we got to get a Billy visit in, given the success on Saturday night, and Red King gets another little red feather runner to the Breeders' Cup. But Billy also joining us because of Karmathon and all the fundraising efforts on Saturday, in particular for California's premier off the track thoroughbred retirement team and system. Billy, congratulations first of all to you and Gary and all the partners.
Oh, thank you, Steve. I really, really appreciate it, and appreciate all the kind words about Karma. We the fact that you stepped up this week and really helped us out, we were able to raise, I believe it's going to come in around $125,000. And in this, obviously, time in this pandemic, that's just an incredible figure, and it just shows the generosity of our industry and how much people really care about these horses and what they're going to do after their racing careers are over. It's really, it was really touching. It was amazing.
I'm thrilled to hear it. And, you know, Karma, as I started to, you know, to do the show and be involved, you know, there were really just a couple of retirement organizations that I was aware of. Then this goes back 15 years and really the two, you know, TRF obviously, and, Karma was sort of the West Coast counterpart, and those were the two that were instantly recognizable, and it's a side of the business and a side of the game that has gotten more and more attention, deservedly, and the message that's been driven home, to owners and any kind of participants about, getting a horse off the racetrack while they have lots of life left and lots of opportunity for second careers and whatever it is, whether it's a trail horse or a saddle horse, whether it's something more involved. And, Karma has been the West Coast's leading retirement organization for as long as I've been aware of retirement organizations.
Yeah, no, you hit it right in the head. I can't say any more than you just said. We say own, race, retire. And we say that, aftercare is not an afterthought. It's all of our responsibility to make sure that these horses are taken care of once their careers are over. And just thank you again to all the people, who listened to your show and watched TVG that day and donated funds for Karma. It was really needed. It was a huge boost, and we cannot tell you how much we appreciate it.
No, it's a pleasure. It's an obligation. It's a responsibility. Talk a little bit about Saturday, and you got was the most jaw-dropping ride by Umberto Rispoli, as I think, it's got to rank up there among the best rides an LRF horse has ever got.
Well, it's funny, Steve, because ironically enough, Flavian Pratt did the same thing 2 years ago with Fashion Business in the same exact race. And this time, Rispoli kind of took it to Pratt a little bit. It's funny because I talked to Scotty McClellan, who is Rispoli's agent, after the race, and Scotty was really excited. You know Scotty, he's been around for years, Chris McCarron, and Solis's agent. And he told me, he said, Umberto told him at some point he's going to do this move. And Scotty said, what is this move? And Rispoli said, don't worry, I'm going to do this move. I did it in Hong Kong, and at some point I'm going to do this move. And so, of course, the race goes off, and Rispoli makes this bold bid at the half-mile pole, and the rest is history. It worked out phenomenally well for all of us, and of course, and he apparently, Scotty texted him after the race and said, was that the move? And Rispoli said, yes, that was the move. So, listen, you know how hard this game is, and to get a horse to the Breeders' Cup, especially when you claim for $35,000, it's so rewarding, and I'm so happy for the horse and for Phil D'Amato, who won his fourth straight Del Mar Handicap, 6 out of 7 years, and for our partners who, they dream about going to the Breeders' Cup, and they join one of our funds or one of our partnerships, and as they don't have to put up hundreds of thousands of dollars to get involved with a organization like Little Red Feather, and all of a sudden, you got a chance to go to the Breeders' Cup and run for $6 million. That just doesn't happen every day. We're so grateful for Rispoli and for Phil and for the horse. Red King has been so genuine. And it wasn't like he was 30-1 or anything. I mean, he was 4-1. He was the second choice, and he just won the San Juan Capistrano. He's in really, really good form. He'd been training brilliantly. And I asked Phil, we can't go in the paddock. So Phil and I usually talk about the race beforehand, and then I said to Phil right before the race, I said, what did you tell him? And he said, this horse doesn't need to be, you know, 100 lengths back. If they're walking up there, you know, he can lay close. He's really fit. He's doing great. He's confident. And the Spoli just decided, hey, they're going too slow. We got to go now. And he said he wanted to put some distance between him and United, which was the difference. Just getting the jump on him, because United is a brilliant animal. He's obviously almost won the Breeders' Cup last year, almost took down Bricks and Mortar. But he doesn't have that turn of foot. And that's why he's so good at those long distances. He always puts himself in the position to win. He's got enough natural speed to kind of be in those races that might not go that fast in any game. So I think Rispoli, by making that move with Red King, he really separated. And if you really watch the race on the turn for home, I mean, he really put like two or three lengths on United, who was just starting to get going, you know, as they hit the wire. I'll be honest with you, Steve. I thought the race was over. I didn't realize until I got home and watched the replay how actually close it was.
Oh, yeah. So no.
I almost cooled it. That's what we say. I almost cooled that thing because I thought it was over. But it was just, it's so much fun. And again, it just really goes to all the Little Red Feather partners who trust us and who are so loyal to us, and they believe in us and they believe in the process. And I couldn't be happier for them.
Well, you know what? As a Philadelphia sports guy, as we say, trust the process. Sixer fans are not going to be very accepting of that right now. But it's more or less a punchline these days. You mentioned the Capistrano, and I'm looking. We'll probably reach out to Phil tomorrow. But I do have to ask, because it's really remarkable to see a horse go on a three race win streak that includes, you know, a mile and 3/8 and a mile and 3/4. It's one thing to win races between a mile and a mile and an eighth or, you know, even a mile and 3/8. But this is a really interesting horse from that perspective, that he can be, you know, he can be kind of moved, not at will, but he can adjust to whatever's going on.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, he really wants to go long. I mean, this is what he wants to do. What he's done in the San Juan Capistrano and what he did Saturday in the Del Mar Handicap. I think those mile races, he becomes kind of a victim of pace a little bit, and if they go fast enough, he can come run them down. So he is versatile, but that's not really, I don't think, his best thing. And that's one of the reasons we didn't run in the Eddie Reed in between. Phil was really confident that the horse was doing so well, and he didn't want to cut him back to a mile and an eighth, knowing we'd have to go back to mile and 3/8. We've done that before, you know, and we decided to just train him up to the race. Phil learned from one of the best ever, Mike Mitchell. And yep. These are Mike's kind of horses, these long-distance grass horses. That was Mike's specialty. He loved it. You remember Star Over the Bay, horses like that. And I think Phil really trusted his instincts and his training ability to know that the horse is fit. He doesn't need to cut back. We don't need to run in between. Let's just go straight for the Del Mar Handicap. And that was the plan all along. So, yeah, he is versatile, he's game, and he's doing really good right now. That's the key thing. When you get a sharp horse, you got to keep going. And you know, I know we're probably going to be a long shot in the Breeders' Cup turf, but you know what? That's why they run the race, right, Steve?
Well, yeah, all you got to do is look at the horse you just beat. You look at United last year, who ran Bricks and Mortar. I mean, to a harrowing decision. So,
yep.
Absolutely, and the partners love it. Gotta reiterate, it's hard to split the difference between the two training achievements of the weekend. Chad Brown with his fifth straight Diana with four horses, Rushing Fall, Sister Charlie the two previous years, Lady Eli and Deceita, plus his sixth overall with Zagora going back to 2011, or Phil D'Amato with his fourth straight with four horses and sixth out of seven, as mentioned, Big John B back-to-back in 14 and 15, then Hunt, Fashion Business for You, Acclimate, of course, and then Red King. I mean, these are remarkable accomplishments in, you know, high level a high level graded stakes on the grass, and you know, the grass being what it is, the competitive nature of turf racing and pace dependency and so forth. I mean, to target these races with so many different horses for Phil and for Chad, it's astounding.
It is. You said it all, Steve. I listen, I'm good friends with both of them. I know. I also know how hard these guys work, and it's not just these guys. It's all these guys at the track that are here at 3 o'clock in the morning, and on race days, you know, they're not leaving till, you know, 8 o'clock at night, and they live and breed these animals, and they work extremely hard, and I can't give them enough credit. And you know, Phil has been incredible this summer. You know, we run PR Radio Star, who we claim to Churchill. He's won two races at Del Mar this summer, and he's going to be tough this weekend in the Pat O'Brien for Phil. He's had a great summer. I think he's second in the standings behind Pete Miller right now. And I joke to him. I said, "Come on, man, we can get you there. Let's go. We're locked in." That's what I keep saying. We're locked in. Little Red Feather is leading in the standings. We're tied with Costa Hronas with 7 wins.
Wow.
With managed horses, because we have, you know, we have partnerships. We have horses that we own with other people, and so the Equibase standings doesn't necessarily reflect all the wins. But we're 7-7, and our good friends, we love Costa. Our good friend Slam Dunk with Nick Casado, he's one behind, and we all have kind of a fun ongoing rivalry. Like, we're all trying to win it, but we all respect each other, and it's a lot of fun. We text each other after wins with standings totals, and so it's really been great down here, Steve, even without fans. You know, that Del Mar has been so gracious, and they've allowed the owners to come out and watch their horses run. They've done a great job with their social distancing and the mask wearing, and really making sure it's a safe environment for everybody. And I give them a lot of credit for getting us back in here, because the other day was just amazing. I couldn't imagine if we weren't there for that. There was a bunch of Little Red Feather owners scattered around the crowd, and we were all screaming at each other. So they handed me the Breeders' Cup winning your in blanket, and I was holding it up, and everybody was hooting and hollering. So although there wasn't 45,000 people there, it still was a really, really fun day.
Well, and I was going to ask you, I mean, how has the summer been? Because it does sound like you're in a similar environment, you know, going to the track. Licensed owners here at Saratoga can visit and can come to the races as well. And it provides for at least some measure of atmosphere, quote unquote. I mean, there might be 35 people on the track apron for a race, just, you know, behind the winner's circle. It's so strange. I can't even.
Strange, yeah.
It's really
the right word. It's bizarre. Listen, you and I have been going to the races for a long, long time, and we love the atmosphere. We love the crowds. We love the screaming and yelling and program slapping and who you got. You know, we miss that. There's no question. It's not the same. But the most important thing, Steve, is that these horses are running, and that's important for the owners, the trainers, the jockeys, the tracks, the players especially. That's the most important thing, so we need to keep that going. That's number one. And then it's great to have owners back in, and it's not going to be the same environment for quite some time. I cannot wait for the day we can return to normalcy, or what people are calling the new normal. But at the same time, just to reiterate, the horses are running, and that's the most important thing.
Well, exactly, and it's keeping everybody going. It's helping, at least. And, you know, speaking of keeping going and bringing up Saratoga, I should mention that coming up on Friday, we'll talk about the Pat O'Brien in a minute,
sure.
But got to mention the cutely named First Out winner by Big Brown, Slash Gordon, who comes back in one of the Stallion Stakes coming up on Friday.
Yeah, no, we have 4 members of the same family. So my boy Tate ran second last week in the Tale of the Cat. He's the older brother. Charlie McCoy, who's a really nice New York bred allowance horse, is the second brother. Then Slash Gordon. The mom of all these horses is a mare that's owned by Michelle Nevin, and her name is Backslash. So that's how we got Slash Gordon. He's the 3-year-old, and then we have a 2-year-old out of the same mare by Micromanage. And okay, remember I said Micromanage, and we named him Michael Scott. For all you Office fans out there. So he's getting ready to debut at Belmont, and he's a beast. Hopefully he might be the best one of the bunch. It's going to be tough because my boy Tate's been pretty good. But Slash Gordon, you know, he was a victim of a pandemic. You know, he broke his maiden impressively right before everything stopped. And so we kind of stopped on him. We sent him out to the farm. We didn't know anything was coming back. It's taken him a little bit to get back. We actually gelded him, which is rare after a win, but he was a bad boy. So we needed to make a little equipment change there, and we're excited. It's a tough race. It's a 5-horse field, but there's a horse in there that just ran, I think, 4th or 5th in the Grade One. So we have high expectations for Slasher, but it's no gimme on Friday at Saratoga in that New York Stallion Series race.
Well, he had been he'd broken the maiden first out, as I referenced. That was at Aqueduct going back to March, and he's probably that much better, you know, physically, in terms of maturity and development coming back in here. We'll look forward to the DRF Clocker report. The horse you're referring to is Jay Hanley's Captain Bombastic, who ran a very solid and sneaky good 4th in the Alan Jerkins. Very nice, and I'll put a plug in for Gary and our friend Eddie F, and of course Eddie F Seafood in Saratoga, and you want to get to Eddie F's for the lobster roll special at Wednesdays, I believe, and he's got Chowda coming back, the Gander winner from February as well. So a couple of comebackers and an inform Captain Bombastic for Maya and Team Hanley. And there's also, let's see, there's Maya's also got Ariesburg in here, and Rudy has got Dream Bigger, the Rapoli runner coming out of the earlier Stallion race on the turf. So he's cutting back. Dive into the Grade One this weekend. You've also got Cape Fortuna that's going to run on. Let's actually get Cape Fortuna in first, the maiden.
Yeah, it's Carpe Fortuna. She's a Carpe Diem filly we bought at the, I believe it was OBS April sale. Doing very, very well. Hasn't missed a beat. We decided to run her on grass just more distance-wise because the next races were coming up. There was a 6 furlong and a 5.5 later in the meet. And she was kind of ready to go, and we wanted to just get a race into her. But she can run. She's very fast. Peterton's done a really nice job. I think she's extremely live in there. I think she's got a big shot, and we own the majority in Saul Kuman's Matticat Stables. Has a quarter of her. Liz Crow is actually the underbidder, who we're good friends with, and we do a lot of work with Liz, and obviously she's immensely talented, and Liz kind of came up to us after. He goes, "Hey, can we partner up with you on that one?" And we're like, "Absolutely." So that's how easy partnerships come together. But she's a very nice filly. We're really looking forward to her debut on Friday.
And that gets us to the Grade One and the very clever claim. And talk about how this is derived, picking off a horse like PR Radio Star.
You know, we're big Thoroughgraph guys, and we were looking for horses at Churchill to bring for the ship and win at Del Mar. And this horse was really, really fast on sheets. He was really consistent. It's an older horse. And we thought, you know, let's take a shot here. And we actually won a 5-way shake. He ran 2nd at Churchill for 25 the day we claimed him. And when we got him out here, he just blossomed. His first work that he had for Phil was one of the most spectacular works I had literally ever seen. It was just an easy half-mile drill, but he did it. I think he did it in like 46 and change or something, and he was absolutely under wraps. And I looked at Phil, I was like, wow. I'm like, because we had planned to run him in a starter allowance race because, you know, that was kind of the plan, to bring him out to Del Mar and you run for the starter. And we saw this other race. It was a 2 other than with an optional 62.5 tag. And he wasn't eligible for the allowance part of the race because he had already cleared that condition. So we ran him for the 62.5 off of these big works, and he ran just lights out. I think he ran a 92 buyer that day.
Mm-hmm.
I think he ran a 3 on the sheets that day, and he won at Del Mar on opening weekend just absolutely impressively against some really, really good allowance types. So we were like, whoa, what do we do now? So we had already planned for the starter allowance, and it just kind of came up at the right time. It was like 3 weeks later in the meet, and he was doing really well. He had a nice work in between, and we said, you know what, let's just run him in the starter. And he ran in the starter, and bam, he stumbles at the start, and he goes wire to wire again really impressively. Steve, you probably have in front of me, maybe in front of you, an 89 buyer that time. Ran a relatively good sheet, but it was a softer field, and he saved a lot of ground. I think he ran a 4. And we said, you know what? This horse deserves a shot. He loves it down here. He's absolutely, his work over the weekend and people who get the workout reports, he's going to be like B+. He had a huge work. He's ready. He obviously loves this track, and we're really excited to take a shot. You know, when you're in this position, you've already won 2 races down here at the meet. He deserves a shot, and the partners in this horse, they're over the moon. They also are the partners of a horse named Ronimo that won the starter allowance a couple weeks ago too, and he's been really impressive down here. So it's like the Red King story. Anytime you can claim a horse and then run in a graded stake, you know, it's exciting, and we will be thinking about it all week. I will be completely overanalyzing the race from every perceivable angle, and driving myself crazy, and I won't sleep the night before, and it'll be awesome. And if we win, fantastic. And if we don't, and he runs good, it's all good. You know, right?
Well, this is the field. You know, for this came up, you know, kind of even. There's going to be plenty of attention, you know, on horses like ZZ Rocket and coming out of the allowance win, Flagstaff in here, who, you know, who certainly has kept good company and has the San Carlos on the resume and it actually has run well down there. How about Vertical Threat coming off the win for Baltus? You mentioned Slam Dunk and Nick. Giant Expectations, the wonderful New York bred 7-year-old, makes his seasonal debut, in fact, for David Burson and partners, and that, you know, this is a horse that we got very familiar with in his time when he would come to New York back at the beginning of his career. It's a nice, you know, it's a nice group. Law Abiding Citizen is back out of the Bing Crosby, but you know, Collusion Illusion, Glatt has got other, you know, other things lined up for him, and no Lexitonian back in this spot. So this is a clever spot, it's a
really good bunch of horses, and yeah, and you know, but there's no there's nobody that you're going, oh my god, maybe we shouldn't run in here. You know, it's a really good race. They're all consistent. They're consistently fast. Law Abiding Citizen drew the rail, and I think he's going to have to go for Glatt. In fact, yep. Me and Mark and I were just talking about it this morning. And hopefully we get a good trip. J.J. Hernandez has been a revelation down here at Del Mar. Yep. I think he's tied for 3rd in the jockey standings at Fables to Dio right here behind Pratt and Rispoli, who are just absolutely dominant. But he knows the horse. He really loves this horse, and we're taking a shot. And
good for you.
He's got a shot. He's not outgunned in here. Trust me.
Well, and the Little Red Feather now really coast to coast, and you can find out more and see all the things. You know, we've talked to Billy not just about his runners, but about the pin hooking partnerships that they've done, and some breeding concepts. They've gotten involved in so many different areas successfully, and really everything that LRF has gotten into, they've succeeded at. Visit littleredfeather.com. Billy, I really appreciate it. Well done as well, helping the Karmathon raise funds that will help horses off the racetrack for safe and comfortable lives after their careers are over on the oval.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Steve. It's www.karmathon.com. four, the number four, horses.org. Donations are still being accepted. So please, if you have 5 minutes and you feel like even if it's 10, 20 bucks, it doesn't even matter. Everything, every little bit helps. So we appreciate it. And thank you, Steve, for pushing it so hard and having me on today. And to all the Little Red Feather Nation out there, we love you guys. And we're going to keep fighting and keep, and we're staying locked in.
Well, big opportunities, Saratoga coming up this week, and Del Mar Friday and Saturday. Billy Koch, always fun. Let's take a break, last of the morning, and when we come back, I think we've got Bob Baffert to talk to. Todd Pletcher actually deferring to tomorrow. We'll talk to Todd. I told him, in fact, the other day when we ran against them, I said, you owe us a visit. And he said, I do? I said, yeah, you do. There were a couple of things that happened, but I'm glad we waited because he won the grade one Saturday with Halliday. And so we'll talk to Todd tomorrow. Quick break here. We'll come back and another half hour at the races. Packing up on the weekend. We got a few more days of that. And then we'll start to look forward toward Derby. We got Derby updates as well. Lots of works. Lots of good works to keep track of, and assignments and things firming up with certain horses, plus getting to be time to start looking at the rest of those cards for Friday and Saturday, a week from Friday and Saturday. Like the whole thing is crazy. Derby. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Saratoga. It's history. It's tradition. It's world-class racing. It's jump racing. Yes, steeplechase racing has played a role in Saratoga's rich history and tradition since 1864. And today, it's a part of what makes Saratoga so special. Watch every Wednesday of the...
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield, the leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit